Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
Well, guys, welcome. We've got Colin Creech, who's a good personal friend. He is a Force Recon Marine, still in the Marine Reserves, self-proclaimed failed base jumper.
Yes.
But you say it's self-proclaimed.
It's pretty clear that I'm a failed base jumper. I definitely can say that I've done base jumps since my big, I wouldn't say it's a failure, learning experience that was very... painful, but also a growth experience at the same time, right? And it's kind of great when you get those, right? Because it's, oh, well, I didn't die, but I can do things a lot better next time if I ever go back into that endeavor. So,
yeah, it also reinforces your mortality.
It's very clear. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It did. I've got a very similar experience. Can you also say where you work, or is that privileged information?
I would say that I work, for a Fortune 40 company that's, focuses in the pharmaceutical and biotechnology space, specifically focused on human capital. So that's my day job. And then a lot of the things that, I've been partnering with you on and all my pursuits outside of work, are I would say really my passion areas too. I love my job. I love what I do, but, it's also at the end of the day with life, like what impact am I making outside of, also earning a living and having a career that I am passionate about, but I want to do more.
I just spoke at a conference. It's the Mental Health Conference Association or something like that in Kansas City, but mostly mental health companies. And I said one of the things about human resources, because again, Talent Wars about human resources. Yeah. I said, I really dislike the name human resources.
Yeah.
When I think human resources, I think like a generalist who handles pay, benefits, things like that. It's you said the human capital piece of it. So when you have a CHRO, again, a title I dislike, I like chief talent officer, chief people officer. It's reinforcing that we're all about human capital. We have a talent mindset. We believe in people are our greatest strength. You went through the leadership development program, which is competitive to get into with this organization, and they put you in pretty much every department they want you to touch.
Yeah, I think it's extremely the way that my company does it is just amazing, because I think there's a stat that, veterans getting out of the service, they end up leaving their first job out of the military in the corporate world within the first 6 months. And so, with my company and what I think with a lot of that comes to is you get out, and you're like, I'm going to do this. And you're like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
And then you got to go figure out something else. And so the program that I went through, a military veteran leadership development program, it's an 18-month program, 3 6-month rotations. And in some ways, you almost have free reign to say, I want to try this. I want to try that. I want to try this. And I think that's where you see a much stronger retention rate with people that come through this program. Because it's like, I was able to find what I thought I would want to. What I could see myself doing for my initial parts of my career. Surprisingly for me, doing something in supply chain, doing something in pharmaceutical marketing, and then doing something in HR, I was like, I'm a Force Recon Marine that I really like HR. I think part of it was the culture. Part of it was just incredible leaders. And I was like, I guess I'm going to do this. And I've had a blast and a lot of growth ever since.
Did that shock a lot of leaders? They're like, you want to go HR, not...
Specifically on like the commercial general management side, they're like HR, and I was like, yeah, I really like it. I was like, I don't think this person's like really feeling it, but I was like, hey, you got to do what you like and what works for you.
So,
We
need more programs like that. There were quite a few programs like that in the 80s, 90s. PepsiCo had a big one. Of course, you guys have you know, sustained the program. Those are great programs.
Yeah.
Well, really quickly, where were you born, raised, and what led you into the Marine Corps post high school?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas, just north of Dallas, Texas. You know, growing up, you know, I had a really awesome upbringing. You know, I live in an area that's, you know, is very safe, very sheltered in a good way. And I was, you know, playing tennis in high school. I hated contact sports. I was just all the things that you wouldn't expect for then somebody to go do something. And I think it was more or less the end of my junior year in high school, beginning of my senior year in high school. I was thinking like, oh no, like, am I going to be kind of this kind of individual the rest of my life, like just scared of all these things. And so I was, no offense if anybody listening to this is in the Army, but I went to an Army recruiter. I think I was about to sign a National Guard contract and somebody made a joke to me. My dad did actually, he was never been in the military and he was like, you know what Army stands for? I was like, no. He's like, aren't ready for Marines yet. And I was like, oh no. Like my dad who's never been in the military, shooting a shot. And I was like, well, I can't do that, I guess, now. So then next thing I was going to the Marine recruiter. I was like, nobody really, people talk crap on the Marines, but all the jokes, you know, back at the end of the day is like, these guys are hard. And so, you know, I signed up for an infantry open contract and I was like, okay, I'll do 4 years, like 4 really hard years. And then I can be lazy the rest of my life. Little did I know that, you know, all the things that I learned throughout those 4 years really set me up, honestly, on just a completely different a different journey that I could have never imagined. You know, it wasn't just 4 years. I ended up doing a total of 7 years on active duty and then about another 6 in the reserve. Some kind of, you know, mixed time. So not only just one deployment, ended up doing a 4 deployments total, ended up getting my degree online at the same time. And I just kind of continued to just see like, oh, I can do more. I can do more. And I also saw the benefit of education. I think going into it, they're like, you know, free college, this and that. I was like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. But then after I was like, oh, I think in education is definitely going to help set me up for success, but I kind of want to continue to do both at the same time. So I can tell you there was times on my second or third deployment, I'd do homework until like 9 or 10 at night, then wake up at 4 a.m., do a little bit more homework until we had this, you know, start doing the things we need to do for the day, and then rinse and repeat. And I still to this day don't really know how I did it, you know, being younger, probably more testosterone and all the other things too, but I was just committed to being like, I gotta crush and do a good work in my job with the Marine Corps on this deployment, but I've got to get this education out of the way as well.
West Coast, East Coast.
So I went, you know, for the Marine Corps, I went boot camp, and then I went to the basic reconnaissance course on the West Coast, and then I was stationed. My first duty station was 2nd Recon on the East Coast, Camp Lejeune.
Yeah. Good, just great leadership in the Marine Corps. I mean, what impressed you to stay for 7 years?
Yes. So you know, I actually was very fortunate to have good and bad leaders, you know, and I think that's everywhere. I think sometimes people see the military and there's this like, oh, like stigma is like everybody knows how to lead and everybody knows how to do this. But actually I thought kind of the you know, the executive, you know, leadership probably certificate I walked away from with the Marine Corps was, I like this leader. I like this trait of this leader. I want to do that. I see this leader as like, I don't want to be anything like this person, you know, and I think it was a really good foundation to just also see like, you know, because I think a lot of us, there's probably things that we're really good at and that's what we do. But I think there's other things where you observe and you're like, how can I bring more of that into my life? And I think it's one of those trial and error things, too. I think there was times when I was a people leader, too, where I was like, oh, no, like that probably wasn't the right approach. It worked. But like I wasn't bringing into some of those leadership positions what I would have wanted to. And it's just continuing to grow and iterate. I think some people just get stuck and that's their limit. But to me, at the end of the day, I think my biggest like experiences in life had always come through, how do I get better? How do I refine this? How do I grow? I think especially on the leadership side. And just, you know, having that ability, this is something I've been doing more and more, is like when I don't know something, say I don't know it, but also surround yourself with people that probably do know that, you know, to get out of that groupthink mentality and fill your gaps with just awesome people that are on your team.
That's probably one of the least seen things by people that never served in the military, is that actually we tell you, hey, if you don't know, just simply say you don't know. It's okay. Yeah. No one's passing judgment. Well,
yeah.
I mean,
they say we're going to make comments, stupid questions, yeah. But yeah.
Just stupid people.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing the ability of, you know, I say the Marine Corps, the military as a whole, to spark something in young kids, young men and women, and completely transform them. In large part, that is, a form of behavioral modeling or observational learning is when you work for great leaders, you're like, oh, the bar just raised.
Yeah.
And I'm going to emulate them and how they do things. And, and it really is, you know, was it, I'll show you.
Yeah.
And then do as I do. And, you know, I just linked up with my first platoon sergeant.
Nice.
Staff Sergeant Eddie Ford.
Nice.
And he wrote a book called Postcards from Hell, I believe it is. And so I'm going to have him on. So basically when he got out, he was a second force recon guy, came over to first recon battalion, was my platoon sergeant. Great dude. And then when he got out, I think it was either Triple Canopy or Blackwater, one of those companies.
Yeah.
And he was delivering the mail in Afghanistan. So they had, you know, via mobility going through Helmand, getting blown up.
Yeah.
But they knew the importance of getting the mail to soldiers at the outstations.
The morale boost from that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to bring him on because I've got all these photos.
That's awesome.
Compromising photos of all of us at a very young age. What was the ultimate decision to depart active duty, move to reserves?
Yeah. So my first 4 years were on active duty. I think it's one of, everybody's got those stories, but you know, I got back from my first deployment. I was like, okay, I want to do even more. So I signed up, you know, I wanted to go to MARSOC selection. I was like, this is the next thing I should do. And then I had a lot of time after that first deployment between then and selection. I was like, okay, like I do really want to do this. I do want to continue to grow here. But at the same time, the original plan, while I knew it wasn't going to work out the way I wanted to, I was like, there's no way I can be lazy the rest of my life. Now there's like too much growth. And I can go a lot further. I just don't know what that looks like yet. So kind of last minute before that, I was like, you know what, I'm going to get out. I'm going to stay in the reserves because I don't want to be done yet. You know, this is part of my identity, and I just wanted to still be connected with a lot of those great individuals. So that's when I went to a reserve force recon company and started going to school. I think an interesting story coming out of that was my first week of college I missed because I was with this new reserve unit, and they're like, what school do you want to go to? Like, any school you want. I was like, well, I haven't been to this school or that school. So I went to this school called Sears School. But long story short, I show up to my first day of college a week late. You know, all the teachers were cool about it. And typical, you know, 22-year-old E5 at the time, I think, I drove a motorcycle because I was like, I'm going to save money. And it's 110 degrees in Texas in August. But I was like, this is awesome. First day of college, I get there. School was interesting. I was like, okay, like, I think I got this. Go outside. I'm like, where's my motorcycle? And so, like, first day of school, right out of that other, you know, military training I just finished, my motorcycle's gone. So it was one of those, I was like, is this still part of the games, or did I miss something? Stolen.
You're kidding.
And no cameras outside this school. I won't name drop this community college that I went to, but the very nice officer on site was like, you're never going to see this again, but I'll write the report. Like, good luck. And I was like, okay. So like a lot of interesting experiences there. Thank
you. You are a true professional. Yeah. And you are great at your job.
Yeah. And then after that, I did like two semesters of community college. And at that time, the reserve unit I was with was looking for volunteers to do deployments in Latin America, specifically like supporting our neighbors to the south and their ability to combat transnational criminal organizations. I think sometimes they called cartels. And that's, I think, those deployments, and I think that's where, you know, not making the decision to kind of continue to try and pursue higher levels, echelons of groups within our own military actually really paid off, because then I ended up doing 2 years straight on that deployment, and that's when I met probably one of the best leaders in my entire life, an E9 Master Guns, I'll call him Caesar, I won't name drop his whole thing on this, but that was one of the most influential leaders, you know, moving forward after that, because I show up, you know, first thing I see is this Hispanic dude, bald, tatted to the gills. You know, we all knew he was like, you know, he had three deployments before the invasion, you know, did like three or four more deployments after that. The dude was hard. And first time I see him, he's like, do you speak Spanish? So I was like, I think I said like, I speak a little bit. Yeah. He was like, no, you don't. Get the F out of here. And I was like, oh, great. This is going to go terrible. And what I really loved about this guy is he just kept putting the right amount of pressure on people. And then, you know, when we were deployed, like on the weekends, he's like, hey, you know, Creech, come to like wherever I'm staying on this foreign base. And he's like, we're going to do some like PME. And every weekend he'd have me like figuring something else out that had nothing to do with the job. And it was kind of like this continual pressure test with him to see, okay, is this how far can I push this guy? Like, what's his real growth potential? And it was probably one of the most like developing parts in the military, but also the impact outside the military, because this is some, you know, E9 that also had like two masters at that point, you know, was incredibly well spoken. And I will say, like, now we're best friends. Now we actually both work at the same company outside of, you know, outside of the military as well. And we're like, we're family today. But at the time, you know, scared to death, I was like, who is this guy? I'm like, he's got way more experience than me, but he was so smart. And he knew the way to kind of put the right amount of military pressure on you. But also when he saw people that were really investing in themselves outside of the military, that's where he was also like, okay, you actually see the bigger picture of things. I think what he had accomplished by the time he got to the E9 rank was, you know, I'm needing to speak to the same level, potentially some of the officers, or to a higher level, and how do you communicate with them? And that was probably one of the best setups for me from when I finally went into corporate America, because, okay, I've got this leadership experience. I've led organizations of over 200 individuals, like multinational, you know, individuals in a foreign country. But then how do you also then translate all that and be able to speak the language outside of the military and translate all that experience as well? So I owe so much to, like, you know, one, like, his scary mentorship at first, but really turned out to be like the best, you know, like, mentorship I ever received, for sure, to that date.
Sometimes it's good to be feared. Great leaders do that. Great leaders continually, or let me say this, they know when to push. They also know when to let off and actually to reinforce.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the best leaders I ever had was a guy named Chris Fussell, who's now the president of McChrystal Group.
Yeah.
McChrystal being General McChrystal. So he was a mentee of General McChrystal. And then I remember the first time we met Chris, he had taken over as commander of our squadron. He's like, hey, I want all the officers in my office at like 10 a.m. on Friday.
Nice.
And it was just like, hey, my guys are going out to train. I don't have time, because I always felt like a shitbag and my guys were out training and I wasn't with them. It's like the prototypical like officer from the movie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you men go forward and I will
do this, our training, but I can't make it today. AC is calling my name. So
it's the band of brothers, that officer who's like, I'm going to go to the HQ. Men stay here. Yeah. So I went with the chip on my shoulder, but it was either 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. Every Friday, he'd pull the officers in and do PME. You said PME, professional military education, which could be mentorship, could be coaching. And he poured into us. And I'll share with you. One day I've got to share this with the world. He was serving in a commander role overseas, in which he probably averaged 4 hours of sleep a night. And as I was leaving his squadron to go to another squadron, he wrote me a 5-page email. And I still have that
five
thing.
Pages.
Wills read that from Chris Fussell. I mean, the thing is just gold, gold. And he talked about mentorship and pouring into to those below you, as McChrystal had done to him. And actually, he helped pen the book, I think, Team of Teams, and then he wrote his own book, One Mission. Phenomenal. And I've had a number of those mentors, both senior enlisted and officers. Another good one is actually an admiral now, Mark Schaefer. I don't know where he's at, but I love hearing that the military understands that well. The military has built a culture. It's built a system on coaching, mentoring, and continually pouring into the generation coming behind you to make them better than we were. And that's the whole fucking point.
And I think that's where sometimes in the military and in corporate America, there's those failures where it's like you're telling people, you're like, do this, do that, but you're also not thinking from a talent standpoint. It's like, how can I also create the person that can then replace me, you know? And in some cases, if you can take your ego out of it as well, like, but this person's like, great, how can I actually make them, or how can I influence and mentor them, you know, appropriately? Like, hell yeah, if they end up being better than me, go higher in the ranks than me, I don't want to be the person that, like, hindered somebody's career because my own ego, I couldn't take that. I'm like, this person's special. They could go somewhere. And I think that's where you see it in the military sometimes too. Sometimes ego gets in the way, but sometimes you just have these leaders who are like, I'm going to just, you know, give them all the information I can possibly give them. If they're the person that's open to that, good, the bad, the ugly, give them that tough conversation, but also give them those little pieces of wisdom. And I think that's where you can really stand yourself out too, because to your point, you talked about that 5-page email. I save. I have a folder in my work email called Smiles. It's just where I put all those awesome emails. You know, sometimes just to revisit. Maybe you're having an off day. You're like, man, like those are the emails that make this all worth it because you know somebody said thank you or somebody wrote this nice thing. You're like, okay.
Anchor like, points.
Yeah, I call those anchor points. Yeah, it's a cookie jar. Maybe you needed a cookie that day. You're like, go through those emails.
No, wow. We don't need cookies.
I mean, sometimes you need some protein. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Are they crumble cookies? Because I'm in.
I had those. They're.
Have you had crumble cookies?
Yes.
Dude, like Jordan and I did go through this. We went through it last night. We were like looking at the menu. We're like, okay, let's do it. Because we told ourselves 30 days. Every 30 days we can have a crumble order and go crazy. And we're about to do it. And she's like, no, we can't. I'm like, damn it. You're right.
Yeah.
Right, but they were so fucking good.
Yeah. You got to have somebody in your life that's keeping you accountable. So yeah, credit to her.
She's good. Yeah. You freaked her out last night, came to the house. You beat me to the house and
I texted you.
She's like, well, who the fuck is this 6'1", 210 pound guy at my door? She's like, oh, he's wearing an out of shirt. So he must be,
I thought that would help. Yeah. And I did my best. Like, hi, I think I beat Mike over. So, like, maybe she just knew I was stalking you and I knew your pattern of life, but she was so nice too. And she threatened to kick my butt, but didn't. I was like, I promise he's here soon. I just, he was going to show me a few things and I leave. I don't want to interrupt dinner. I'm sorry. So, yeah.
Well, if Bane was with her, Bane sitting right here, it would be a different story.
It was the other one that's very old.
That's Dash.
Very sweet dog.
Dash is, he's like a walking Chewbacca.
He's a great, or I was thinking of Ewok.
So at what point did you get military free fall while in the military?
Great question. No.
Did you get static line?
Yes. So
hated static line.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those things. Another good reason for me joining the military was, you know, I think there's a book Ryan Holiday wrote, which is called The Obstacles Away. Mm-hmm. My friend Chris just turned me on to it, but I'm a big fan of all of Ryan Holiday's stuff, like Daily Stoic. But, you know, I was scared of heights before. I was scared of everything before the military. And so you don't really get a choice in some ways. But, you know, my thought was, I'll just go into a recon company. I'll get in a jump platoon, you know, because I didn't really want to go to dive school. I was scared of that, too. I was scared of everything. But, you know, first thing first, they sent me to dive school instead right away. And I was like, oh, no. So, you know, going through the
pre-dive. So you went through MCD.
I did. But, you know, the pre-dive alone is the most legendary part, as you remember, a 2-week battalion screener. I think 35 guys were there, and at the end of the day, five of us passed. It was one of those, like, okay. And then you get to actual dive school, and it wasn't as bad as a screener. You're like, all right, there's that thing too, right? Which I think it goes back to, like, you know, train how you fight. So, like, making that way worse, then when you get there, you're so much more comfortable, and all the other, you know, activities are a little more easy to overcome. So then I did go to jump school. So I was what do they call it, the Cyclops. I just was like the bubble boy for a little bit. And then I went to static line jump school. Also got over my fear of heights there as well. And then I think that was when I started skydiving outside of the military. I was like, okay, kind of interested in this. My friend talked me into a tandem, and I was like, I really want to do this. So I started getting my A license and getting into skydiving on my first enlistment. That's really where I was like, I really kind of am interested in skydiving now that I'm not afraid of heights anymore. And so free fall, I think, was one of those when I was actually making the decision to get out. You know, you get sat down by a sergeant major. He's like, hey, if you stay in, we'll send you to sniper school. We'll send you to free fall. And I was like, I'm already skydiving outside the military. I don't know if that's really going to sell for me anymore.
I love how they wait to, they're like, oh, you're thinking of getting hurt. Okay. Then we'll send you to sniper school. Like, well, why wouldn't you send me to sniper school a year ago?
Yeah.
You got to love the military sometimes.
It's a retention risk, right? They know it works. Sometimes people, that's what they want. So,
you know what? I loved it. So, static line was hard to get when I was at First Recon Battalion.
Really?
And, so I was a Cyclops.
Heck yeah, man. I appreciate that.
But then you'd run into some like Log Sioux or what do we used to call them?
Ops Reek or I don't know.
A Marine that does logistics.
Yeah.
And they're wearing a jump pin. You're like, hey, how'd you get to jump school?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, well, I was going to get out after 8 years, and they offered that to get me to stay in. And you're like, mother? That's the one thing that pissed me off about the Marine Corps at the time. I think there was a lot of those things where I thought highly of the Marines and their capability.
Yeah.
But the old General Al Gray, every Marine is special.
Right. Yeah. We are all special.
Every Marine is... God bless every single Marine that serves in whatever capacity they are. But there is, when it comes to performance, capability, and capacity, you've got to bucket people. Yeah. There's a normal distribution with regards to talent, whether you're in recon, you're in the SEALs, you're at a tier one, that normal distribution always exists. So at what point do you get into base jumping? What made you make that leap? Because I would never do that. Would never do that.
You know, I was 22 or 3.
Okay, there you go.
And so I just got with my reserve unit. I met this guy, and he was at my reserve unit, but he was also a stunt guy. And he was like, already a way more accomplished skydiver. I think I had like 50 skydives at that point, which is not the right way to kind of progress. But he's like, I'm going to go to this first jump course in Twin Falls, Idaho. He's like, you want to go? And I was like, I just said yes to everything, you know? He ended up bailing out last minute. So I just went alone to Twin Falls, Idaho, went through this like 4-day first jump course, you know, which all of these things at this point, if you look at, I'm pretty sure it's the same way now today. Like, there's skydiving equipment. It's all got a lot more rigor and testing and regulations. Mm-hmm. That stuff, pretty much, I think it always says something like, this is not like, there's a lot more like wiggle room with all the caution labels and all those things too, because it's not like a sport managed by a really intense governing body. It's more just like some dude in a shed who kind of gives out good ideas. And it's grown a lot too. There's some really reputable companies, and it was good then too, but yeah, I went to this first jump course, did like 13 jumps. So BASE is an acronym, right? This is in 2013. BASE is an acronym for building, antenna, span, earth, span being like a bridge, earth being like a cliff. And so, you know, I just was obsessed with like getting things done. So went to that course, bought a BASE rig. And then I was like, I got to get on the other objects, which you should not progress that fast. I definitely didn't have that many jumps of any kind that I should be doing it. But I think within like 15 more BASE jumps. Young.
Yeah.
But within doing, you know, within being like 15 BASE jumps in, but I think by the time I had like 30 BASE jumps, I had already done a building, you know, somewhere. I'm not going to say where. I'd already done an antenna, I'd already done a cliff, and I had what they call a BASE number. And there's a group of individuals, it could change by now, but the numbers, BASE numbers 3 and 4. So they're the ones to do it the third and fourth time. And I think they were in Houston that kind of manage it. So you kind of send them a cool letter, like I did this, this, and this, and they'll issue you a BASE number. So I'm number 1,752 to jump off of all four objects. And that was in like 2013 or 14. Quick turnaround. You know, it was definitely one of those like, okay. And I got away with it. And I think that's, you know, kind of, we'll get to it, but like what led to my accident, because I kept getting away with it. I just kept getting lucky. It wasn't like I was not a good canopy pilot, you know, flying. I could land sometimes standing up, you know, and so I just kept pushing it and having a blast with it, you know, and people say, are you an adrenaline junkie? I think actually more for me, it was like, okay, how do I do this? I think it was the recon side of me too. Like if you're going to go, not that I would ever do it, like go jump off a building. It's like, well, how do you get in? Where would you land? Like, you know, taking in data into account, like what's the height, you know, what are the winds like? And I was really intrigued by that too, because it was kind of combining two worlds as well. Like, reconnoitering something and
reconnoiter. Now you got
me. How do you say that word? Reconnoiter. Oh yeah. Well, I was a Marine, so you know, I think I passed our spelling for Marines.
Well, I remember too. The last part of the screener into reconnaissance was spell reconnaissance.
And I can do it now, but I'm not going to do it on this podcast. It's R E C O N. That's where I leave it.
Recon.
I was recon Marine. Recon Marine. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a W in there somewhere. I think there's like a Z at some point. So got in, moved really quick through that sport.
What number jump were you on when you, in Italy, correct? Yeah. In the, what region?
So in northern Italy, it's Trento. So there's like three major lakes. You know, I think everybody knows like Lake Como. This is Lake Garda. So it's like there's like Lake Como. Don't know what this one is. And Lake Garda, and then right near it is this kind of like mecca base jumping. It's a legal cliff. I think you jump from like around, it's like a 4,000 foot elevation change from where you jump to actually where you land. So you can get a lot of incredible fall. And I think my first, so I went there with another course this company was running. So it was kind of like, you know, learning to track and do bigger objects, which is something that's not as easily accessible in the US, especially the National Park Services and things. Like a lot of the places where you might be able to do it, it's not legal. So I got off my third deployment at that point in the reserves. It was 2015. I think at that point I had 90 high 90 base jumps, probably I'd gotten a lot more skydives at that point. I think I had a C license, and I think I probably had like 300 skydives, but I wasn't current because I just got off a deployment, so I'd done a few more jumps. I did an antenna in this area locally, like the night before I flew out. Is my mic working?
Yeah.
Oh, it's cutting out. But anyways, and I jumped with a local guy here. It was an Army Ranger medic. We did an antenna like the night before I flew out, and it was a bad jump. I landed perfectly. He jumped, and then his parachute opened the wrong way. He impacts this object, the antenna, and he's just sitting up there. And I was like, oh, no. You know, and I hated heights still, but I was like, I already jumped off this thing. I was like, do I have to climb back up this thing and go see if this guy's okay? And so I climbed back up like 200 feet, external ladder to check on this guy to see if he's okay. And I get up there. I'm like, if this guy, I hope he's okay. And he's like, he landed somehow, his parachute opened facing the antenna, landed somehow the wrong way and just impacts the antenna. So he's kind of stuck between the crevices. So you've seen a lot of those antennas. They're like a triangle shape, they're like, I think this one was like 240 feet up. And so I'm like, hey man, are you okay? As I'm like death gripping the ladder at like 200 feet, no safety gear, no ability to climb in. He's like, yeah. I was like, all right, if I can help get you down, like I'll come back later and like bring some stuff so I can help get your parachute down. He was like, No, man, I want to get it down now. I was like, what? And it's like all wrapped around this antenna. So the guy did most of the work. I can say as I was sitting there death gripping the ladder, I'm just kind of like getting this line out for you, getting this line out for you. And so we somehow got it off the parachute, off the antenna. We climb back down. As soon as we get to the ground, the guy just starts like blacking out. And I was like, oh no. And this guy, I don't want to give too much information on him. He was a ranger, you know, but he was a big dude, maybe like 240. So I think his size also helped him because like he didn't break anything, but you know, his shin was cut up and he was bleeding. And this would probably be a sign for me to probably get out of the sport or something at that point. But we were able to get him back, you know, towards his car. So he basically just crawled back to his car at that point with me walking with him. And then he got into his car. I was like, you want me to take you to the hospital? He's like, nah. He's like, I was a medic. I was like, I'm just going to go home and like super glue the cut and I'll be fine. Was completely fine. But that was one of those like, oh, this sport, I know this is dangerous. I kind of like had a few broken bones at that point too. And then I flew to Italy like the next day to go then, you know, go do this course and really get into tracking. So it wasn't wingsuits at that point that I was using. I was using, it's called a tracking suit. So it also inflates, but it's kind of a good first way to start doing it. And it was supposed to be, my goal was, because I was going to college online still at that point, was I'm going to go base jump in Europe until I go broke, just using kind of my GI Bill and doing school at night. And I'm just going to really live into this professional base jumping life. And that lasted about 36 hours. So I land there the night before we were drinking, before we started this course. And I was like, maybe I should get some travel insurance. So I purchased this like $100 travel insurance the night before. We did three jumps that day. First jump, I think I got like a 17 second free fall. It's on video. And I was like, this is insane. It was really next level. That's like that's longer than a hop and pop in skydive, which where you jump at like 5,000 feet. And then the third jump of the day, there's some footage too. Basically it's kind of funny. I think I was looking at the guy that was teaching us and I was like, any last words? He's like, have a great time. So it's kind of an interesting way to then go do a jump. It was a good jump. There's still, you know, feedback. We're just trying to figure out the tracking and how to do it. And I was pretty heavy at that time, so my track wasn't that great. I made a little bit of distance, but beginner, you know. Parachute opened fine. Everything went really well. And I think this goes to the inexperienced part. So then I was going to land in this, like, cul-de-sac still, you know, pretty high up into this gorge over where this cliff is. And so there's a lot of ways I could have easily landed that parachute, but I was just burning off altitude in like a very junior way. I was just, we call it crabbing. It's where you're just kind of like crabbing back and forth. And so I crabbed and I was like, I think I can go around this tree and land in this cul-de-sac. And so when I was going around this tree, which is, you know, increasing my speed, like one line of my parachute caught like one branch and this tree was on like already on top of like a 30-foot hill. So basically my parachute caught, swung me around the tree, and at that point my parachute has collapsed. So I probably fell like I would say 30 or 40 feet going at like a pretty hot speed. And then I hit, and I've slowed the GoPro down enough that I can tell you exactly how things happened. And then I hit the ground, my head hit the ground. Then my GoPro broke off. I probably bounced another 15 feet, and my GoPro bounced with me, not connected to me anymore, and landed facing me. So then I got all this extra great footage too. But what had happened is I crushed my right heel, so I kind of impacted to the side. I would call it a PLF. It was a pretty kind of close one. And then as soon as my right heel hit, which crushed the heel as the calcaneus and talus crushed together, then as I was falling, my left knee hit. So then my femur broke right above like the left knee, bounced. I actually thought my elbow was maybe broken, but we have the footage. We can share it at some point too.
We'll be putting it in the Men's Journal editorial.
Yeah. And so then I, you know, tried to get up, saw like the weirdest bend of my life, you know, in the leg. And so I laid back down, and people are always like, you didn't make a single noise. Well, I like to joke like, well, you know, from my career as a recon Marine, it's like suffering silence. Yeah. But it was also like, I was like, what am I going to say? Right. And I was definitely in shock for like a solid 10 minutes. And so I laid there 10 minutes. I kind of tried to get up again. I was like, oh no, like I can't move. So I laid there for 10 minutes. And I will say it was probably like the most beautiful 10 minutes of my life. Like it was like the perfect amount of shock, perfect amount of like, you know, head trauma. And I was like, man, these mountains are beautiful. Like, this is really great. Like, it wasn't like that scary at that point. I was just kind of like, oh, like, well, this kind of sucks. So then one of my really good friends then landed. He's like, hey, how did it go? He's like, are you okay? I was like, I broke my legs. And he was like, oh, you know. And so he comes over. A few other guys land in the same place. We'd all kind of planned we'd land in that area. And, you know, none of us spoke Italian. So then we're like, how do you call 911 in Italy? So we had to figure that out too. And so it took about 2 hours for them to get there. At that point, I lost about like 2.5 liters of blood internally on the femur side. And it conveniently, I think the rig, because I had not taken my base rig off,
tourniquet.
I turned into a tourniquet on the left leg. Yeah. And so finally an ambulance got there, and they're like, oh, no, you need to get care flighted. And I was like, okay. So I waited another amount of time. They get there. They didn't speak English. I didn't speak Italian, but I spoke enough Spanish that I was able to say, like, I was like, oh, dolor, I'm in pain. I like using more words than that because I was more fluent at that time. I was like, I'm in pain. They're like, yeah. Okay, we can see that. And so my friends, being amazing people that they are, started filming the whole thing too. They're like, we're going to document this. So they were very nice, but there was some like botched care at the same time. Like they did not put my femur in traction. So you see him like rolling me onto a spine board, and you just see the leg flopping. And sorry for viewers, we don't need to show that part, but you know, making some fun noise and cussing them out a little bit. It's like, I know not to do that, but that's just my military experience, you know, like put it in traction, but also don't strap you down like over the broken femur and stuff too. And then they gave me probably some sort of painkiller. And then I can tell you that was probably the last painkiller I got the entire time, the 8 days I was in the hospital. I can go into more detail there, but I'll stop. But the hospital experience alone was another really fun experience too.
So they got you out of the country as quickly as you could be evacuated to the United States.
That's where that travel insurance came in. So I called
them.
They questioned it for a second. They're like, well, it went into effect at midnight, and then this accident happened like 14 hours later. They were questioning it a little bit at first. I was like, we can question it now. I wasn't that good at words still at that point. I was like, or I can just get a lawyer and we can figure this out later. They're like, okay. So what they did with this travel insurance that doesn't cover base jumping anymore, good call on them. I got a surgery done in Italy. And then they sent a nurse out from Dallas, and this awesome dude, he was like a traveling nurse. He does these trips like to remote places with this place all the time, you know, Harley motorcycle guy, buff, but like the nicest dude ever. And so he gets there, you know, loads me up with ammonium and like liquid Tylenol, which is what I had been on the entire time in the hospital. Maybe my friends snuck some drinks in occasionally here and there, because like a third of a beer after losing like 2.5 liters of blood, like you're good at that point. So you only need like half a beer and you're solid. Kills the pain. Not the right way to do it. I don't condone that. I'm not a medical professional, but it worked at that time. And then, yeah, they flew me back to the U.S., and it was the weirdest experience. I've never seen this. So I basically would get pulled into, like, a Lufthansa flight. They just strap me down on top of the seat, so you're about, like, an inch away from the vents, and then they just put kind of, like, blinds around you. And this is, again, how expensive this whole thing. I think the whole thing ended up being, like, $60,000 for the helicopter, the surgery, 8 days in the hospital there, and then...
I'm surprised it wasn't more.
Well, I didn't have to pay for it. Yeah. That $100 covered it all. And the insurance ended as soon as they dropped me off at a hospital in Dallas. And that's where it ended. And then thankfully, my dad knew the guy there. I showed up. He's like, what do you need? I was like, I think I'd like to try morphine. He did that. And I was like, okay, I don't need that anymore. But because I just did like liquid Tylenol, I was like, that was too much. But they were great after that. And then it ended up being about a 6-month recovery after that. They had to redo the whole surgery that was done there. They had botched the surgery, so they had to re-break the femur and redo the whole thing 6 months later, knee surgery. But it was actually one of the beginning of my entire life in some ways, because of not only was it was an accident, but it was more 6 months to sit in bed in my parents' house and kind of think about what am I doing with my life and what do I really want to do with my life too. It was that's when being time alone with yourself to really start figuring out what's next and what should I be doing.
You have another recourse to reassess.
Yeah.
Thanks. Especially something that severe.
Yeah.
Where you were possibly inches from losing your life. Right. Had you, when it rotated you, had it flipped you to where you hit your head, you'd have been done.
Well, I was wearing a helmet. It hit hard enough that it broke the GoPro off, but just hard enough that, Marines are pretty durable. So
built that way.
Yeah.
So you take a six months recovery. Yeah. When do you get back into, when's your first jump? How long did it take you to
good question.
I'm assuming it wasn't a base jump. It was just a.
No. Yeah. So, I think I probably did my first skydive. That was 2015, 2016. I think I did my first skydive probably a year and a half after that. Was still kind of semi-actively skydiving, and I had this like thought in the back of my head, because at the same time is when I started in corporate America, so that was kind of an aha moment, like let's figure out some other ways to kind of grow up and start making starting that second career. But I also thought I don't want to leave base jumping where it left off. So I always had this idea of how can I go back to Twin Falls specifically and do a few more jumps so you can at least leave on a positive note. And that was also where I realized like the amount of you need to invest, the amount of time you invest can also increase your chances of a positive experience. So I ended up going back to Twin Falls in 2018, did like 13 more jumps off the bridge. I can say they were all like the most perfect landings, because that's all I was working on after that. But at that time I was like, okay, that was good. I don't need to do this anymore for now, but at least I know I left this on a good note. So I think I've got like 110 base jumps at this point. But last one was 2018, so I'm not an active base jumper. I say a failed professional base jumper, because I was like, I want to be a professional base jumper. Now I'm like, you failed at it, but you learned a lot from it. It's not really a failure. It's more just a funny way to say it.
It's base jumping is, God, there's just so many fatalities.
Yeah.
I've met guys who are like, I started with about 10 friends, and now there's like... Yeah. Six of us left. I'm like, hey, that's 60% is not exactly great odds when it comes to life.
Not great odds. So,
I mean, it gets you in the Hall of Fame as a baseball player. But
I don't think we have a Hall of Fame in base jumping. No, so it's probably you have legends, That's
Shane, what was Shane's name? We just watched that documentary together. Conklin, right?
Shane McConkie.
McConkie.
Yeah, thank that you. One's great. Yeah.
Legend.
Legend.
Legend. What was the final cause? It was a parachute malfunction, right?
No. So he was very innovative. So I think he was doing a ski wingsuit jump.
That's right.
In Dolomites. In a similar area. Yeah. I was in the Dolomites somewhere else. And so very technical. You have to be a skier. Good. Probably didn't even get to that point where he exited. And their whole setup, they were using skis that I think were much older, but it was a way that they could release them.
And it didn't.
The story is, I think one didn't release, and then that kind of makes it hard to kind of manage your wings at that point.
I got to get Miles Dasher on here, because I know Miles Dasher was close to him, and do a tribute to McConkie. Probably, and people wouldn't traditionally put them in this category, but probably one of the best athletes of our era. People just don't.
Yeah, and I think that's where you've seen this in all lines of work. Like, somebody that impressive, you think, is there an ego on this guy? Like, I met him a bunch of times at the bridge, some different events. He doesn't know me, but the nicest, most genuine guy at all times. I mean, I think the new Mission Impossible just came out where, Tom Cruise was doing legit, moto base jumps, right? Like,
that
jumping
was Miles Dasher.
I think he was the one, that was helping him through that experience, which is, he's just awesome. And, you know, thinking somebody that he must have, I don't know, probably 10,000 base jumps. I have no idea, tons, and still here, you know, and I think probably a lot of that goes to how active he is, but just how, you know, how he approaches the sport, I would imagine too.
I got to meet him briefly at the PIA in Reno, and then got to meet Jeff Provenzano.
For another one of the
legends,
the Red Bull Air Force.
The Godfather of swooping. It was very quick, but I've told Jeff I want him on the podcast. It's just timing. So. I want to hit the two last things. Yeah. So Miles also helped Andy Stumpf set the initial wingsuit distance record, roughly around 18 miles, I believe it was. Which then was broken by a Marine at 19 miles and change. About
a mile further,
And then you're going to give this an attempt. Through Legacy Expeditions. We're aiming for Memorial Day.
Yes,
of next year.
2024.
And you've got basically a 9-month training plan.
Yes.
Together.
Yeah, and I think learning from my mistakes. Yeah, I think some people on paper would be like, "That's not a lot of time." I probably have, I don't know, 20 wingsuit jumps, skydive jumps, but those were 8-9 years ago. Yeah. The way I view this is, one, you know, getting back into it is doing it the right way. We were talking about this yesterday. Getting the right coach to help you get there and progressing at the right level. You know, wingsuits, you know, they start off small, they get bigger, and the complexity and like the room for error and ability to fly them gets, you know, more and more tough. But as we know, like, You can't take shortcuts in anything. So if you're going to do this, you need to progress slowly. You need to continue to get professional feedback and support to make sure that you know, any sort of thing. I mean, we were just jumping, you know, working on our pro license a month ago. And, I mean, we were talking to Brad, who's just it was one of the best coaching I've ever gotten in skydiving. It was so, I mean, that would be good and coaching
for everyone
outside.
That is Brad Cole out of Skydive DeLand, who is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, but just an amazing teacher.
He's
an amazing teacher.
Yeah. And like the way he made the progression was so perfect, but he told me one thing when we were working on that too. He's like, "Hey, I didn't like this, you know, this worked for that." And I was like, "Yeah, that's exactly how I failed previously. So we're going to cut that right now." And, you know, just continue to have him refine. You know, we all left that and we were, you know, just almost nailing it. And it was one of those, I was like, wow, okay. And just when you see and you get bad habits, having that trusted instructor too, it's like, let's cut that right now and refine it and fix it.
For those listening, the pro card is the qualification within the USPA that allows you to jump into stadiums. If you ever watch those, what we call pro teams or demonstration teams. And so we are, Legacy Expeditions is standing up the Folds of Honor skydiving team. We're going to be doing our first jump November 10th in Lake Nona in support of Folds of Honor, and then hopefully start jumping into these public events. But to get the card, you've got to land consecutively 10 in a row within this small box on a drop zone.
It sounds big, 20 feet by 40 feet or
and
something
like
that. Yeah, no.
And yeah, my ankle is still, I think I bruised the bone.
Yeah.
Because I had landed in the box, but with my speed, it was going to take me out. And I did one hard stomp with my heel. And I actually stayed in the box. Yeah. It counted.
Yeah. It counts.
And actually, I did another jump into the box, and that's where I stopped. I think I've got to get like two more.
Yeah.
And it was a bone bruise.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad. I can still feel it. It's a lot better. But that was what, I don't even, 4 weeks ago?
Yeah. Probably. End of July, yeah. Yeah.
And my ankle still... the bone hurts, but it's healing.
Yeah, I think with all of these things too, I think to get back to what we're talking about too, you know, especially after my accident, I think it set me up for this completely different journey I was never expecting, which was, okay, this sucked, your body's going to heal, but it was kind of also unveiled a lot of other things I had been dealing with, like that just hadn't thought about, you know, from like a training accident, my first deployment that we talked about briefly, you know, near death incident and other things too. I was like, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that I really need to work on, you know, and it's taken me to this point, you know, where I think with my purpose and why, you know, we align, I align so much with Legacy Expeditions too, and a lot of your guys' support and goals for Folds of Honor is my goal with Flight for Life is kind of what we're calling it, is how can I make a positive impact? You know, and am I going to be the person that's going to go climb Mount Everest in like a record time or something like that? No, but I know my strengths. And so for me, at the end of the day, like breaking the world record, that'd be cool. Somebody else is going to break in a few years. That's just how it is, right? Good, right?
Training the next generation to be better.
Set the bar a little higher.
Yeah.
Continue on. But what's the impact I could have with this, you know? And to me, doing something for Folds of Honor, which my whole purpose in life at this point, we were talking about the other day, is I just want to help one more person. Yeah. And so with this, you know, trying to raise money for Folds of Honor is the priority. You know, I think we talked about this and we'll figure it all out, but I was like, I would fund this whole thing with my own money, just knowing the impact it could have with Folds of Honor, the impact it could have with the family and children of fallen first responders and military, you know, providing them scholarships. That's everything to me, you know, because at the end of the day, like that record is going to get broken one day if, you know, and I just want to not care about the record, but know that I had some sort of positive impact on just one person's life. They don't even have to know, like, Colin did this and this is where you're getting it from. I don't care. I don't care if they know it's me. I just want to know that somebody else is getting a benefit in life that then can set them up for success. And hopefully, at the end of the day, you're working with you, Will, over here, too, is just in just making that impact. Even if the credit doesn't go back to us, like, how can I make somebody else's life better or help set them up for success to do the same?
I know for a lot of people, it's just like, well, you guys just do loud things.
Yeah.
And there is truth to that. You know, modesty. I none of us could say we're high in modesty, doing what we do. Humility, I hope so. But if you're going to do things that break records, then they're loud by nature. And the reason we take on those challenges is because they're just that, they're a challenge. Yeah. Can I identify or be innovative or disruptive in a way where I can push that bar just a little bit higher? So. Yeah. I know Andy this week has been doing jiu-jitsu. He's at a jiu-jitsu camp. We'll connect you with him. And, you know, he's a great coach. Yeah. And hopefully he can connect you with Miles Dasher, even if it's for a phone call. But I know we're going to attempt that in Tennessee. I'm excited personally because September 23rd, Mike Barker, who we call Boots, myself, Jim Wiginton, and Eddie Conway are going to go set the 43,000-foot record for skydiving in Tennessee. So it comes to Ada, and if you don't mind, I'm going to start this story here. So, you know, this whole Men's Journal thing started after I wrote the book, The Talent War. They did an interview on me. You know, the guy who wrote the article, we stayed on the phone and talked for quite a while, and I went into my everyday warrior philosophy. Hey, we're all warriors. It has nothing to do with a gun. Being a warrior is everything about a mindset. Never accepting the status quo, always pushing to the next level. And they eventually came back and said, hey, why don't you write a column called The Everyday Warrior for us? And I'm like, hey, why not? That's a great opportunity. Helps us get the word out on not only the talent war, but other things, leadership, excellence, resilience. And so the company then came to me and said, hey, we want to start an apparel brand. And we started, it was an 8-month process. We went to a branding agency out of Chicago, SoulSight, which was, these people are so creative. Awesome.
Amazing work.
And from everything, they had me tell my life story, my philosophy. Yeah. Ada was created. Why Ada? So, you know, you often hear like Ada boy, Ada girl.
Yeah.
But, you know, I kept saying with the journey, like nothing, there are no shortcuts. Yeah. There are no hacks. Everything, you know, how do you climb a mountain? One step at a time. And we combine that, Ada.
Yeah.
How do you build a business one brick at a time, one customer at a time? How do you grow muscle one rep at a time? And so after 8 months of a lot of work with an amazing team, we launched Ada. I want to say, Will, it was what, March or April of 2021? I think it may have been.
I don't know. I'm just saying,
And literally, we had a press release go out on a Tuesday. I get a call from a very good buddy who was technically my boss. And he said, hey, don't spend any more money. And I'm like, and we had had major legal agreements in place. Great company to work with, by the way. And I didn't even have to ask. I said, okay. I saw the writing on the wall. I think a week or two pass, and he calls back and says, "Hey, we're cutting away a number of our portfolio companies." And I said, "Hey, I understand. Economic times,
yeah.
Post-COVID were very interesting." And after back and forth, finally he said, "Hey, we'll give you this company." And I was actually shocked and humbled. And I said, "Okay," but I didn't have the bandwidth to re-stand up ATA, and I've held it. I kept it on the warmer, yeah. And we left the site up without ever advertising. Some people would find it, make a purchase, but yeah. you saw that I had it, approached me and said, "Hey, I'd like to stand this back up and give it a shot." And I've been waiting for that one person to reach out with an olive branch and help me out. And here we are, and we're about to do a soft launch September 15th.
Yep, that's the goal.
You are taking the CEO spot. I know you have another job. This is a side thing. But what was it about ATA that sort of brought you in?
You know, I think just looking at it, and it's something, my own personal journey, my own mental health journey, we don't have to go deep into that today, but, you know, the pillars of ATA is mental, spiritual, physical. And I know that that's like, I think those are some of the three most key parts to, you know, a grounded life period. You know, like for me every day, it's like, how can I do something from, you know, my body? How can I do hard things? You know, I don't want to go deadlift heavier. I don't want to go squat. I don't want to get in my cold plunge, you know, but I do it. And I always feel better after that, you know, or mental for me, it's, you know, doing breath work or meditation, always feel even better after that. Or the spiritual part, whatever that means for people, you know, I think there's something else that's there too. But I think the way that this is even more perfect, because I think there's a fourth thing, is community. And I was like, this literally is all the things I've been thinking about. And now there's this company that, you know, you've been talking about it. There's a time on your part too. And I was like, I love everything about this, you know, and I love the view of the website. You know, it's not your average everyday thing when you would associate it with somebody like Mike and Colin. You're like, is this just going to be a bunch of like, we like all these hardcore things and that? No, I think it speaks to everybody. I don't think it's not supposed to just speak to people from the military. It speaks to the everyday warrior community. And so when those four things, you combine them, community, spiritual, mental, physical, that's the things that I've been working on my life this entire year too. And I was like, I love that. I love that there's a brand around a community that's trying to do, you know, one thing every day, whether one step at a time, you know, one lift at a time. You can go all day. Attitude, you know, there's so many plays on words, but I think at the end of the day for me, it was, I just loved it. And I think I was pitching you some ideas too, and you're like, well, why don't we just do this? I was like, wait, I wasn't like really trying. I didn't think of it that way. I was just like, had some ideas of what we could do with this. And I was like, oh, I'd be honored. You know, I think you're being humble about like, we're going to do this, but I was just, you said it was fate. And I was like, I didn't think about it like that. I just really love what you had here. I thought it was beautiful. And so I can see so much that we can do with this, especially, you know, kind of probably the initial launch, you know, there's still kind of some transitions out of the pandemic. And I think it's now a perfect time to bring it back to life. And I think there's a gap there in the world, not from like a customer segment, but like what people need, right? A lot of those things can mean something very different to everybody. You know, physical doesn't have to mean you're crossfitting every day. It could be doing yoga. Mental can be, you know, maybe you're reading books, maybe you're growing your mind, maybe you're meditating, whatever that is too. I think it's so broad in a way with the four pillars and the community, the everyday warrior community. I think it's just beautiful. One thing I nerded out on all the documents, I went back through everything too.
Oh yeah.
The root word, you know, like where does ATA come from? From battalion. You know, you think about a battalion, yes. You think community. And I was like, oh, cause I was like, did some branding company just like, oh, just ATA, huh? No, it from a word that's very familiar to us, but you translate it out to everybody and the ATA just is a beautiful way to
say it. So you brought up the point. It comes from the root.
Yeah. I read everything battalion. You sent me. Yeah. I was like, I got to know everything about this.
And, you know, I'm excited about this because one, I want something to be positive. I want it to be for everyone,
yeah,
regardless of your beliefs.
Yeah,
and I think people are searching so much for guidance, especially young men and young women, is for guidance, for coaching, for mentoring, more so to have a sense of homecoming and belonging.
Yeah,
and I believe you can in this day and age build virtual communities
for
which people can rally around with a positive message. With a very candid and direct message sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity. I know we've got a ton of work Yeah. Ton. And to build a community is not easy. But the potential for the impact of, I mean, even the kids book, we were talking about that last night. We're writing that thing, and I don't want to say another thing about it.
Yeah,
like, that's.
I already kind of started working on it last night. You said it, and I was like, oh, I love everything. I'm part of that, too. So every time you give me good ideas, I'm like, how can I figure that out? So,
that one is not a heavy lift. Yeah. You usually have to find a very good artist.
I already talked to my sister just to see if she was open to it. She's an artist, but
there you go. Yeah,
but we'll align. But
so, your attitude, and the reason I made that offer is that I'm like, you're authentic, you're genuine, you're kind, you're empathetic, you're respectful, you're everything I talk about when it comes to a warrior.
Yeah.
Again, I'm sure you were a great warfighter, and I just, quite frankly, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
But you have a warrior mindset. You're never going to quit. I just want, the biggest fear I have is people are going to, oh, it's just, this is going to be a military brand run by a bunch of military guys.
Yeah.
And that's not it. I think we've left that. It is part of us, but it is behind us. And I am not a warfighter anymore.
Yeah. I think to exactly what you're saying, like, when I think everyday warrior, I mean, obviously this podcast and a lot of the other things you've done with that, but I think whether you are somebody from the military, maybe you worked in supply, maybe you're a special operations, or whether you're just a mom trying to manage everything she needs to manage every day, you know, the thought of one step at a time, like, okay, what one thing can I do today, even if it's not going to be this perfect day where I got to meditate for 30 minutes and then I did like an hour yoga class. Like, sometimes it doesn't work out, but how can you just move the ball forward a little bit every day is what I think the community speaks to. I think that's what makes it unique, because I think also the work that we've been doing behind the scenes, you know, we're looking for quality products. We're looking for things that people want to wear, that's comfortable, that looks good, and that's clean.
And is a reminder.
And
hopefully
reminder.
Puts a smile on their face with a reminder when their day is hard.
Yeah.
One step at a time.
Yeah. And we all need them, you know, like even yesterday, you know, like I came straight here. We were working a lot all day. I was able to do some stuff, but at the end of the day, I think I was texting you probably still. It was like 9 at night. I was like, I got to go for a walk because I didn't work out today. I was like, I got to do something. And so it was just a walk, but it was, I was like one step at a time. I was like, just get something there. And I'm still moving the ball forward. And I think it's beautiful.
Dude, the power of just a simple walk.
I had some questions for you, though, too.
Oh, which shit.
I think tie into a lot of our things. And I'm willing to try and answer them as well, too. But, you know, I think I was thinking a lot about, one, our community. But I think a part of this community, too, is the honesty behind everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I think when I think about the pillars that, you know, that are behind this brand, mental, physical, spiritual, the community, I think that also goes to, you know, what does that mean for different people? And I have some questions around those. I'd love to hear your thoughts on them as well. Like, so I'll start on one kind of like on the physical side, and maybe it's even from like accidents. Cause you know, like we've all had, like whether it's a car accident or whether you're 25 and you think you're the most coolest base jumper ever, and then, you know, you almost die, you know, there's all these setbacks. So what was one of your biggest setbacks physically, and how did you overcome it yourself? And you can't say one step at a time yet.
Yeah. So physically,
whether it's injury, whether it's, you know,
let me preface this question. Yep. So here's what my military career looks like up to this point.
Yeah.
Boot camp, honorman, meritorious Lance Corporal, School of Infantry, honorman, go to BRC.
Yeah.
I'm number 3 behind 2 guys that were both Rangers and snipers and both like sergeants picking up staff sergeants. Yeah. Corporal course, honor man. I picked up corporal 6 months in the Marine Corps. Out of boot camp, I picked up 6 months out of boot camp, which is unheard of.
That guys, is actually insane, especially in you're not old. It was just a little bit ago.
So then, you know, get picked up for the MESAP program very young as a corporal.
Yeah.
They send me back to school. Go to OCS. Honor man, and actually set 3 records. Highest leadership score ever. The O course.
Yeah.
And also there's this British Marine sort of beep test.
Yeah.
And even the drill instructors were yelling because I was the last guy out of all the 200 officer candidates going back and forth. And they said I had the longest time ever.
Oh, Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And then...
that's a record in OOA, I guess.
And so then go to the SEALs, graduate BUDS, and I wasn't honored man in BUDS, but there was a question they asked, who would you most want to go to war with? And it's known as the Fire in the Gut Award, and it was Cirelli.
Yeah.
So I had had success in the military prior to going to combat, and then you go to combat, and we're successful for the first, you know, 6 months of our 7 month, or actually 7 months of our 7 month deployment, and you start to think you have it figured out, and you're invincible. And then a grenade comes over the roof, and it requires one of my guys to jump on it.
Yeah.
And so the shrapnel through the legs, one, I had to get debrided because the holes in my legs were deep, and for it to heal out, they had to debride it daily, which was painful. But it was both physically and mentally getting over that, is that it crushed the foundation that I thought I had. And it was a realization that you're not as good as you thought you were, not even close. And somebody had to give their life for you to recognize this. But physically, I had shrapnel in my legs still, and it took me a while to get back, and the guys were resetting to start working up for another deployment. And I just had to fight, and I had Derek Benson was pulling shrapnel out of my legs that whole workup, and then Derek was killed on Extortion 17. Handsome dude. Handsome. I mean, just, like, graded everything. Graded everything.
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, to me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that one in reflection, it's like my accident or any failures I have in my life, I think it's one of those where, you know, the dark side is the good. So it's like, if I hadn't have had that experience, like that ego check, where would I be today? Because, you know, I think sometimes I was crushing so many things, but getting such an incredible ego check, do you feel like it also made you, it got you to where you were today because you also had that moment of, oh, I'm not perfect, or I'm mortal. I'm capable of getting these incredible setbacks.
It was the classic Dunning-Kruger effect. I was on the top of Mount Stupid.
Yeah.
Think of it. Thinking I had mountain. I thought I was better than I was. I thought I was smarter than I was. I thought I had more experience than I had.
Yep.
And that started me down the slope of despair. Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time, probably years later, and on my 10th deployment before I'm like, okay, I think I'm starting to figure out life, and I think I'm starting to figure out this thing called war.
Yeah.
And by that time, it was like your time's done. you're done in the military.
Just two more questions. They're all really easy. They're so not hard at all. But again, kind of thinking of our pillars with Ada, but have you ever been in a tough place mentally? And what did you do that helped you get through it? So not, you don't necessarily go through details, but like when you've been in those places mentally where you're like maybe in a funk or maybe in a dark place, what did you do that helped you get through it?
So it was after I left JSOC.
Yeah.
They sent me by myself directly to Austin, Texas, where there is no military unit. And so for the last two...
Great community.
I know.
Nobody.
and I wanted that. I wanted to be in a silo. I wanted to be isolated. I didn't want to be around the military anymore, but technically was still in getting my MBA. And I just got dark. I was drinking heavily. I was fighting. I was womanizing because I was freshly divorced. Suffering silence, you had said it earlier. It took an individual to say, hey, what the hell are you doing? And connect me with a guy named Dr. Chris Free, who worked with me for a year. And then, you know, I met my wife, Jordan. So I finally learned the power of just saying, hey, something's not right. I need help. Yeah. And so that's what truly was my introduction to vulnerability, and that vulnerability is not a weakness, it's a strength. And I could have gotten better a lot quicker.
I think for me, too, I had sometimes I forget things. Maybe, I don't know, bouncing off the ground or other, you know, maybe too many explosions. But I wrote 8 rules for myself, and my very first rule for myself is it's okay to ask for help. I think ego or just scared of what people are going to think for you, but I know with you, I just recently met Will. I can see it in his eyes. Like, I trust this guy too. And it's like, it's okay to be like, hey, I'm not winning today, you know? And when you find those trusted people, it's okay to ask for help. And if somebody doesn't help you, you know, like, doesn't mean they don't care, but you know, it's okay to ask for help. Final question. And it kind of goes along in the, along the same lines as the last one too, but I think about the community aspect as well, because I think it's so important, right, to find individuals that are around you that you can trust. But, you know, just in life, who do you turn to when you need help? Like right now, like if like, oh, I got this going on, I got that going on, you know, the same names, but who are the people you're like, those are the people I'm going to go to now that I know care about me. And if I need something business related advice, maybe it's relationship advice, any of that, who do you go to?
So I believe in quality over quantity. I also believe heavily in tribe. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about it in the Everyday Warriors. Yeah. A tribe is everything. Is one, Jordan. Yeah. That's my number one confidant. She's my best friend, always. But there are some things you can't bring to your wife, or you don't want to bring to your wife. One, you don't want to scare the hell out of her when you're like, business is not going well. Yeah. We may have to cut back.
Yeah.
So I turn to guys like you, my tribe, and just simply say, hey, bro, I need your opinion on something. This is what's going on. This is what I'm thinking. And it's amazing how we can talk each other off a ledge and be like, hey, dude, you've got this. And in fact, if I can help you, do you need me to cover something for you? Like, let me send you $1,000. I got you.
And
that's an extreme case, but no.
I actually need $1,000 too.
It's not going to happen.
I'll Venmo you a request. But I think that's everything too. When you think about it, you know, like you also don't know everything. And then I've had so many times where I'll finally like just, hey, bro, I've been struggling with this. What do you think? And they'll give me this perspective. I'm like, what was I even worried about? Like, just getting that other perspective, you're like, oh, there's such an easy way to navigate this. I just didn't maybe have the tools or resources to think it of myself, but there's always a solution. Sometimes you just might not be able to have it yourself, and you have those trusted people you can go to.
Everyone needs mentors and coaches, and usually they're the same in their lives. If you don't have one, you're basically handcuffing or crippling yourself. Yeah. To accelerating or maturating or evolving at a quicker rate. And I mean, we are products. Great leaders are a product of the mentors and coaches they had in their lives.
Yes.
If you want to think of Admiral McRaven, or I'm thinking of, you know, Margaret Thatcher or Winston Churchill, they are all a product of these amazing people throughout their lives who rarely get the credit for the person that they molded and shaped into the leader that they were.
The only follow-up I'd say to that is, I don't know the quote exactly right, but, like, you know, the people you see, you know, today and what they've done, like, you don't see all that work that it took to become that person that's in that limelight. You know, sometimes we see those people, it's like, how could I ever be that? And it's having people in that journey that no one ever sees that gets you there.
And for a lot of people, they have to understand that I actually say it, I'd rather be a kingmaker than a king.
Same.
You stay out of the line of fire. One of the most valuable things in life, and it's taken me a while to learn this, is to find more joy in other people's accomplishments than my own.
Yeah.
And I'm the type of guy, I've said this before, is where like a commanding officer after a mission would be like, Mike, that was great. You guys, like, don't pat me on the back.
Yeah.
Like, go talk to the guys.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need that. I don't want that. And I'm fine with it, man. I'd love to brag about my tribe. I love to brag about my tribe because I think very few people have a authentic, genuine tribe.
Yeah.
People that will be there when things are hard.
Those ride or dies, you know.
Those ride or dies, as Fast and the Furious would say. Good. Well, dude, I can't thank you enough for coming on.
Yeah.
Guys, go check out liveatta.com.
Yep.
You're going to see this in the infancy. You're going to see this grow. And I know with the determination of not only Colin, but myself, it's not going to be an easy road. It's going to be a fun road. It's going to be a journey. We want you to come along. You know, please go make a purchase. I hate to ask that.
Yeah.
It especially touches out and reaches you on some level. And we're also going to be doing a lot of good for these foundations that are helping first responders, veterans, and other people. So, go check that out. Again, thanks for joining the podcast. Remember, go to your preferred platform, whatever it is, Spotify, Apple, like this podcast, leave a review. This is how we get better. Please leave your comments. They mean the world to us, and we do read them all. All right, guys, we'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.